Welcome back to this class on self-care. How to receive the support, the information, what things you do to take care of yourself. Now, this is the third session in this class, and I've been talking about self-care in a couple of different ways, four of them actually. Physical care. We've talked about that a little bit, and you may need to explore that more fully in other places, other ways. Emotional care. You're taking care of yourself emotionally. You're getting the help you want. Now, the emotional care speeds over. That fills all these other places as well. The physical, the social, the spiritual. Those are all things that contribute to emotional care as well. Today, I want to talk about social care a bit. So we're gradually checking these off. The self-care involves physical health, emotional health, social health, and spiritual health. This is a picture of a man named Aaron Ralston. Now, he's been important for me. I read about him first in a magazine that my brother had given me. My brother, when he hit his 40s, went through a bit of a midlife crisis and began to want to do mountain climbing and hiking and backpacking, and he invited me along. And I got to tell you, every trip we took was disaster. But my brother gave me a registration for a magazine called Adventure Magazine. I read about Aaron. You'll notice he has an artificial arm. Aaron went hiking by himself one day, backpacking, into the canyons of Utah. And while he was there, he slipped. He was climbing up a side of a canyon, and he slipped, and his right arm got caught, wedged in an area in the canyon there. And he sat there and he tried everything he could do to get it loose, but nothing was working. Nothing would break loose that arm that was caught there. And this went on for days, a couple of days. He sat there thinking that he was going to die because he was there by himself, number one. He hadn't told anyone where he was going, number two. And the fact was that he was now stuck and in deep trouble with no way out. Now, I believe, as I recall the story, it was the third day that he was hanging there and realized he's going to die if he doesn't do something. And so he got out the knife that he carried, and he cut his own arm off. He put a tourniquet on as best he could and tried to struggle out of the canyon, stumbled out of the canyon, came across some people there who called rescue unit, and he was rescued. Now, Aaron has become a metaphor for me of the fact that we can't do it alone. We can't do ministry alone. Earlier, I shared with you about burnout in the ministry profession and the high percentage of people who are burning out and aren't getting the right kind of self-care going in their life. The person that I quoted there, Christina Maslach, who had been looking at burnout for years, said there are all kinds of things you can do, but burnout is not a do-it-yourself thing. You cannot get out of it by yourself. You need other people to walk with you through it. Remember that. If you're off by yourself and nobody knows where you are, emotionally speaking, societally speaking, you can get into deep, deep trouble. And why? Because ministry is draining. Gordon MacDonald has been a mentor of mine, not individually out face-to-face, but through his books. He's written marvelous books. And he says, in ministry, you're going to encounter at least four different kinds of people. One, they're the very important people. These are the people that should get some of your time, right? They're the people who are giving the direction to the ministry, or they're on the board of the ministry that you are serving, or they give a lot of money to the ministry. These are very important people. Secondly, he said, there are the very trainable people. These are very important people and should get some of your time because they're ready to be trained to take part of the load of the ministry so that it's not just all on you. Then he said, there's the very nice people. And boy, isn't it great, some of the nice people you experience in ministry? It's powerful. But then you get the very draining people. And these are people who sap your energy, and you know it. And there are people around that you let into your boundaries, and they begin to take your energy and sap it away. So what happens is you need people around you who are going to fill you back up. In fact, Scripture is pretty clear about that. I'm surprised we haven't caught on to that in our modern-day ministry setting. This is a picture of somebody made of David and Jonathan after David slew Goliath. And it says, Jonathan and David made a covenant. In other words, an agreement together. Because he, that is Jonathan, loved him as his own soul. And Jonathan took off the robe that was on him, gave it to David with his armor, even his sword and bow and belt. In other words, this is somebody who said, I want to be in a relationship with you. And we know that Jonathan had a significant role. When David was running from Jonathan's father, Saul, there's this wonderful statement that Jonathan went and found David and helped him find strength in the Lord. Now, there are those people, if you invite them in to your life, who will feed you, who will help you find strength in the Lord. In fact, I found it absolutely astounding in ministry when I read the New Testament, when I read the Gospels, and I read that when Jesus sent out his disciples, he sent them out two by two. In other words, ministry is not an individual thing. It's not something that you do, but it was done as a team. And after that first church experience that I was in, where I was in by myself and I was working myself to death, literally and in some other ways, the next church I had a partner, one that lasted 20 years. When I came to the third church, that one in Grand Haven here, I recruited a person in the church that I thought would be a good partner for me. And he had gone through training to be qualified, to be ordained in one of the categories in my denomination. And he did that, and we were partners for 11 years, and they were rich years. Somebody with whom we can share. Ministry is not intended to be a solo activity. It is intended to be something you do with people who are going to fill you up after you're drained. One person in a marriage setting said, you've got a love bank, right? And there are various things that pull money out of, withdraw from your love bank. And there are fights you have with your spouse. There are challenges you have with the family. There are things that drain your love bank. And so you need activities that will fill them back up. Well, if you've got a ministry bank, an energy bank, there are a variety of things that are going to drain your bank. What's going to fill that back up? I have found two different kinds of people, and I can't spend as much time on this as I'd like in this training session. But you need people to connect with you, people that you can talk to about ministry, people that you can give insight into your own heart and soul and your own passion. And you'll find these people are there. They want to be there with you. One time in my ministry, I invited 12 people to meet with me in Southern California, where I was serving the church. And these were people who came all over the United States and Canada, from Denver, from Grand Rapids, from Canada, Ontario, from Alberta, et cetera, et cetera. I says, come and meet with me, because they were in churches like mine. I says, come and meet with me. We'll be together for 3 days talking about the things we have in common. And so we ended up doing that for 10 years, every January, right after the holidays. They would, of course, wanted to come to Southern California at that point and would come. And we would just sit for 3 days and talk, and we'd recreate. We'd go out to dinner. We'd play, talk, have a short break in the afternoon. It was a rich time. After the first year, we began inviting our spouses. And so it became something that filled us, that gave us energy for ministry. So you need people to connect with you. When I came to Western Michigan, I thought, I'm missing that. When I left that church and came here to Western Michigan to Covenant Life Church, and so I began asking around, who in West Michigan has a ministry like mine? It happened after I came out of a meeting of ministry leaders, and I thought, that was a waste of my time. What do I want to talk about with people? What is going to help fill me? And so I contacted six other people, and invited them. Five came. And every month we met for lunch, and We simply talked about the things we have in common, things we're struggling with, and how do we handle these things. People to connect with. And then you need people to walk with you. People who are closer. People who are not just going to, you know, share ideas with you, but people who are going to love you. People who are going to walk with you. Now, I, you know, was a proud person. I'm not quite so proud anymore. But I was a proud person in 2006 when I crashed. And I had seven men. It was astounding to me. Seven men, individually, not together, individually, one by one, they came to me and says, "We're not going to let you go through this alone." And so they walked with me. They prayed with me. They listened to me in times of anger, in times of depression, in times of hurt. They walked with me. And I found that astounding. And my relationship with some of those men continues yet today. And when we get together, there's a tie there. There's a bond there. Because they walked with me. And I could be honest with them. My relationship with two of those men continues very intimately on a regular basis. I have an accountability partner with whom I talk every month on the phone for about an hour and a half. And we share with each other. We resource ministry with each other. We care for each other. We pray for each other. You're going to be surprised that if you ask people, they will say yes. When I came to West Michigan again, I had a connection with the one person who now lives in Colorado. But I thought, I want to meet somebody local. And so there was somebody I knew of from time in Southern California, that he lived not too far from me. And so I said, "I'll buy you lunch if we can talk." And I said, "I need this. I need somebody to whom I can speak, to whom I can be accountable, to whom I can talk about my feelings and my challenges." And it helped that he had a counseling background, but he said, "Well, let me pray about this." And he said, "Yes." And wow, we had 11 years of meeting together regularly. Find people who can be around you. In addition to that, you got to find some social help. This is under the rubric of social health, of the four areas of self-care. But some people with whom you can laugh. I have one friend that I get together, and we just have the same sense of humor. We laugh about things. People who are going to fill you back up. That's the point. You're going to need filling. And that brings us to the subject of time management. How do you manage your time? Who do you let in? We've talked about boundaries. We talked about what you put in those boundaries, who you let in. But how do you manage your time? Everybody's got the same amount of time, you know. The Bible says a great deal about time. First of all, there are two words in the Bible that talk about time in the Greek New Testament. One is chronos, from which we get our word chronology, and that means time is just marching on. And then there's the word kairos, which means an event kind of experience. You know, something happens, and this is a turning event. Birth of my son, my first child, was a kairos event. Birth of each of my children, grandchildren, was a kairos event. Getting married was a kairos event. So there's these two kinds of time. Bible talks about this, Old and New Testament. Be very careful then how you live, not as unwise, but as wise, making the most of every opportunity, because the days are evil. Now, Paul was talking about a setting back then, but it's true today, right? To make the most of every opportunity that God might have for us. Like this one from Colossians, be wise in the way you act toward outsiders, make the most of every opportunity. Let your conversation be always full of grace, seasoned with salt, so that you may know how to answer everyone. The time, making the most of time. Some of the Old Testament passages, the plans of the diligent lead to profit as surely as haste leads to poverty. In other words, diligence, using your time wisely. Or this one, go to the ant, you sluggard, consider its ways and be wise. It has no commander, no overseer, or ruler, yet it stores its provisions in summer, gathers its food at harvest. How do you use your time? How do you discipline yourself so that you remain diligent? Esther 4, that one didn't come through. That's not good. Anyway, the story there is of Esther. And yeah, you remember the Old Testament story of Esther, where she's becomes the queen, right? And she's hesitant when the proclamation goes out to kill all the Jews and plunder their property. She's hesitant to go to the king and ask him to stop that. And Mordecai, her uncle, says to her, "But who knows whether you come to royal position for such a time as this?" A kairos time, that you're in a position where you can do something right now. So Bible talks about time, using it wisely, using it diligently. But time is limited. There's a story about the professor who got in front of the class with two big jars, and he had rocks and pebbles and sand. And he said, "Do you think I could put all this stuff in this jar?" And the students didn't know, didn't care. They guessed, some guessed one, some guessed another. But he started by putting in the sand, then he put in the pebbles and the smaller rocks, and then by the time that time, there was no room for the big rocks. And then they said, "Well, I guess you can't." And he got out another jar, and he started with the big rocks, and he put those in first. And then he put in the pebbles, and he shook it, and the pebbles would sink down around the big rocks. And then he put in the sand, and he shook the jar, and all of it fit. And the professor then said, "Now the point is, you've got to put the big rocks in first." So how do you do that? Stephen Covey has written for this in a marvelous book. If you haven't read it, you should. It's The 7 Habits of Highly Effective People. It's an old book, so it's around in used bookstores all over the place. You can order it on Amazon or wherever. But he said time you can divide in 4 quadrants. You'll notice the upper left. It's the urgent, important. These are crises, pressing problems, deadline-driven projects, meetings, preparations. In other words, these are things that happen, and you've got to take care of them now. You know, I've got a deadline. Sunday doesn't come when I want it to. It comes when it does. And so it's a deadline. I've got to meet that. It's an urgent and important thing. Somebody calls me, and a person in the family is at the hospital dying. I don't say, "Well, you know, I'll see you tomorrow." I say, "I'll be there," and I go, because it's a crisis. It's a pressing problem. Something happens. Somebody comes into your church with a gun. It's happened here in the United States too often. And that's not a moment where you say, "Well, we're going to pick this up tomorrow." It's urgent and it's important. So get your immediate attention. On the upper right is quadrant 2, which is not urgent, but it's important. Now, on there, he lists things like preparation, prevention. In other words, if you've had a problem, how do you make sure that problem doesn't recur? Values clarification, defining what's important to you, what fits those boundaries. Planning. Relationship building, recreation, and empowerment of other people. Quadrant 3 is those things that are not important, but they are urgent. Interruptions, some phone calls, some mail, some reports, some meetings, some proximate pressing matters, many popular activities, etc. These are not important, but they appear as urgent. And then there's quadrant 4, which is not urgent and not important. Trivia, busy work, some phone calls, escape activities, time wasters, irrelevant mail, excessive TV, etc. Now, you know, in my own life, when I became aware of this, it was quite a shock because I found out several things. I found that, one, I spent a lot of time in the urgent section. It was a large church I served, and there were things that came up. But I also found that the more time I spend in the urgent, the less I wanted to spend in quadrant 2, which was not urgent. And yet it was the most important part of my life. Instead, when I had spent a lot of time in quadrant 1 or 3 or 1 and 3, I would default to spending my time in quadrant 4 because it just felt like a relief. And so the question for you is, what goes into quadrant 2? What are those things you schedule into that time that you're going to make time for because it's important? It may not be urgent, and you may be interrupted by some crisis stuff, but you're going to spend time, you're going to schedule time for quadrant 2. I've got some reflections on that. First of all, where you are spiritually gifted, that's where you should be spending time. Now, my primary gifts are in teaching and in preaching and in leadership. Those are my primary gifts. And so I have to commit time to those gifts. And I find when I get out of my spiritual giftedness and try to expend great time there, I get drained. You know, this church I've been serving for a while now as interim has required me more and more to spend time in the administration stuff, the details of church, making sure things are scheduled on time, making sure there's connection and conversation between various people for worship, one thing after another, recruiting people for various aspects of worship and et cetera. And, I come home sometimes drained. In fact, a friend of mine who's a counselor put it this way. She said, there's things in life that are eustress. In other words, they're still stressful, but they're good. They feed you. And distress, which drains you. And preaching for me is a eustress thing. I love it. God's called me to it. I know that. He's told me that. And so there, I schedule my time there because I know that's important. And I try to limit the others or try to create ways to put that onto somebody else's desk. So spiritual giftedness is part of it. There are various gifts mentioned. There are questionnaires online if you don't know your spiritual gifts, which will help you. But here's a list of some of them from Romans 12, prophecy, service, teaching, exhortation, generosity, leadership, mercy. 1 Corinthians 12, wisdom, knowledge, faith, healing, miracles, prophecy, distinguishing spirits, tongues, interpretation of tongues, helping, administration, and for 1 Peter 4, speaking and service. Find out what your gifts are, and the more you can focus your time on those areas, the more effective you will be. Second thing in looking at time is named after this person. His name is Vilfredo Pareto, and he developed in 1896 in Italy what's called the Pareto Principle. In other words, he noticed that 80% of the land in Italy was owned by 20% of the people. And then he noticed in his garden that 20% of the plants in his garden yielded 80% of the product. And so he began to look at this, and he began to see, and others who have read his stuff have looked at this principle of 80-20 and found it all over the place. For instance, 80% of activity will require 20% of the resources. If you put your 20% of the resources in the right area, you'll get 80% return. 80% of usage is by 20% of users on a given website. 80% of revenue comes from 20% of customers. 80% of problems come from 20% of the causes. 80% of profit comes from 20% of the products. 80% of complaints come from 20% of the customers. 80% of sales will come from 20% of the salespeople, et cetera, et cetera. So it's become kind of a law. It's called Pareto, the Pareto Principle, 80-20. Now, there are those people who have taken this and applied it to a church or ministry setting. 80% of volunteer hours will come from 20% of the people. If you don't believe this, look at your ministry. 80% of offerings come from 20% of the people. If you don't believe it, look at your ministry. 20% of the people will demand 80% of your time. Look at your schedule. See if that's true. And so the principle is this. 20% of your effort will result in 80% of the positive things, the goals that you have being reached, the advancement of the ministry, the enrichment of your family and of your support system. 80% will be revealed and result from 20% of your effort. So what goes into your 20%? What goes into quadrant two? Spiritual giftedness and the Pareto Principle. In other words, what 20% of my activity, 20% of the people I should be spending time with? I should be spending time with the very trainable people, but as a very draining people taking that time away, maybe I've got to build a boundary there. So, Pareto Principle. Your calling. What is your calling? I was out of ministry for a year in 2006, and God made it very clear that He called me to preach. I was invited to preach by a friend, and I was preaching, and I felt God say to me, "This is what I created you to do. Go do it." And I'm a pretty effective preacher. And if you don't believe that, you can go to Christian Leaders Institute, and you can take my class on preaching, or you can go to the blog that I write for Christian Leaders. It's preachingacts.com, and there are a few of my sermons on there about the church, but it's mostly reflections on preaching. But what is my calling? And now, very importantly, something we're going to look at more in depth in the next class is what are my goals? In other words, if I'm looking for output and I've got to invest 20% of my time, 20% of my resources, 20% of my energy in order to produce 80% of the results, what are the goals? What are those things I want to accomplish that I've got to spend time on? What are those things that I put into that quadrant too? Because it's important, very important, but it's not urgent. What am I going to protect time for in order to spend it there rather than in 1, 3, or 4 quadrants? So next time, we're going to start looking at this thing of goal setting and having smart goals. We'll see you then.